Hey everyone, we're back. Another episode of Smart Brand Marketing. Today with me, I have Meryl Johnston, and she works for Bean Ninjas. And it's an accounting firm that also does online courses. Hey Meryl.
Hey Tom, it's great to be here.
Yeah, so as you know, I mentioned it before, I think it's very interesting, right? Going from a productized service, which a lot of people just want to get into in the first place, right? Just have something that they don't have to do custom and then can have someone else fulfill, but then moving into the online course space. It seems like you found the holy grail of businesses, right? You're like trying both models, which everyone wants to do.
Well, it's been interesting going. I went from consulting to productized services, and I love that. As you said, not having to do custom work and having a team handle delivery and being able to build a brand. And then I've always been interested in teaching. I used to teach accounting at university and also interested in coaching. And so I was teaching accounting a little bit anyway, and then thought, hang on, I think this is quite a complementary business model to what we're doing with the productized services. And I've got a lot of ideas around courses we could create, but the first one that I've created two now, but the first two that were created were solving a pain point for people that are a bit early stage to buy our service. And so I was teaching them how to do it themselves. And that had two benefits. One was that it built trust because they hear my voice over and over demonstrating different things in Xero, the accounting platform, and talking through ideas. And then the other was that it demonstrates, well, maybe bookkeeping is a little bit harder than they originally thought and encourages them to outsource it.
Yeah, I think that's the smartest part, right? So not only are you selling the course, but you also show them like, look, this is how much work it is, so just pay us. It's very smart.
Yes.
I like that. And it was the thing, right? Like, that's what I've been thinking about too, because, you know, we do the course marketing and, you know, I always thought like, oh, I don't want to, you know, do another course on course marketing because one, it's so complicated and most people just won't get it right. And I just don't want to put something like that out. But if I just, you know, explain kind of like all the things you need to get done to market it properly and people just see how much work it is, it could be actually a good driver of business for me.
Yeah, definitely do it.
Yeah, it's just the time, Meryl. Like, you know, I'm completely booked like all the time and I feel like I have all these ideas and all these things, but especially with courses and training, like you actually do have to put in the time and do it yourself. Like you can't have your employee, well, maybe you could, I don't know, but I wouldn't want to have doing something like that. I think for your courses, you mostly figured them out yourself as well, right?
Yeah, generally. So it's me doing all of the videos and I've created all of the templates and the worksheets myself. And it was actually pretty hard to do that running my productized service has 15 people in that team. So it was pretty hard actually to free myself up from that business to create the time to actually think through the content and think through what I was teaching, how I was going to teach it, and then actually record everything. So, but you're right, I did a lot of the content creation, and then now that we're doing delivery, I've got our operations manager is helping me with that, so doing a lot of the admin tasks like sending out course access and keeping people accountable in a Slack group, things like that. So now that it's created, the running of it, I've got a team member helping me, but you're right, yeah, there was a big time investment up front in actually creating the content, and that was me.
How did you free up the time? I think every single listener right now that's busy with their business is like, how did she do that? because that's the biggest question right now, right? Like, how did you create the time? Because we just don't have time.
It was hard. I knew that I wanted to create a course and it probably took me a year. So maybe even more than that we're up to cohort 3 of students. And I've been iterating on the course over the period of a year. So I had the goal in mind that I wanted to do it, and it probably took me a year before that to actually free myself up or start through that process. So I drew out an organization chart and of all the roles that I wanted, and my name was in a lot of those different categories. And then I gradually started to hire people or hand over that work to other people, and then which then helped to free up my time. But it wasn't something I said, I'm creating a course and then the next day I started the course. I had to free up time first while I was thinking about course ideas. And then really what really made me do it was I pre-sold the course. So I had a go at creating the content and it just never got finished. So then I actually pre-sold a course in March of this year, 2019. and that forced me to create the content. And then I just refined the content I'd previously created. And literally the week before the content came out, I was finalizing everything. So I was just a week ahead with that course. So having paying customers and deadlines just made me do it.
Yeah, the one thing, you know, when you sent me the email, and you said that you use the service business to learn the pain points of a market and then create the course based on them, which is smart, you know, because that's what you need to figure the time out to do. You know, I always tell, like, some of the listeners, too, you know, when you have competition, like, don't look at them as competition. Look at them as your potential customers, right? So even if you're, like, in a fencing business or a mechanic or anything, like, if you can create a course on how to successfully run that type of business, you can sell this all day long to your competition, right? So it's just stuff you figured out. And I, you know, that's kind of what you did, but in a different way. But I always say, like, don't look at, you know, your competition as competition too. They could be the best customers. So, yeah, let's get into your course and let's talk about the initial one. How did you get the first few clients in? I think that's you had a beta program, but I find getting the first few clients is quite difficult for a lot of people.
I just reached out to my network. So I sent emails, private message people, called people just to say, hey, I'm running this course. This is why I think it might be beneficial for you. And in some cases, it had been something that talked about previously. They didn't understand their numbers, something like that. And so it was mainly friends or it was all people that I knew. And it was just individually reaching out to people to see if they were interested. And we did have a couple of people go through for free as well. So people that I thought had an audience of others that might want to do the course and then invited them in to try it. But they were mainly paid participants. And I think that's important. When they actually, if someone pays you, then they're validating that they actually want to learn what you're covering in the course, whereas it's a bit different if they're coming in for free. And in my experience, not so much with that beta group, but later on we've had some participants go through on a scholarship program, and the people that are paying in most cases have been more committed than the people who are doing it for free in terms of actually getting results and doing the work.
Yeah, from what I've seen, it's very, very dangerous to have people go in through your course for free in the beginning, especially asking for testimonials. Most people will not take it seriously, one, and two, just say, like, yeah, it was great because you gave it to them for free. And I find this, like, you just don't get the right answers and you don't get that honesty then from someone who, you know, put in like $100 or $200 and they're like, you know, actually, this part is not that great. Like, I didn't get it, you know, because they paid. So yeah, there's a real danger when you just give your stuff away for free in the beginning. So I'm glad you did that. How many people did you go through the initial beta launch?
There was 12 people. Okay. And I split that into different groups. There was some virtual assistants and employees, and then there were business owners. So I split them into two groups for the different calls. And actually, no, three groups. We had an e-commerce. There was enough e-commerce people to go into their own group because some of the accounting topics are a bit different for them. So we actually had three groups. And then I realized it was a bit hard creating three versions of the content. So that was something I learned doing the beta program with the 12 people and then refined that the next time around.
How did you refine that?
So I realized that virtual assistants and business owners could get the same content because what the knowledge that they needed was the same, but it's just the language they were using and the questions they were asking were different. So they just needed to be in different call. They needed to be in different calls and different Slack channels for the interaction, but I didn't have to use language like business owner or team member. I should just create one set of content and it was relevant for both of them. So that was what I realized there. And then with the service businesses and e-commerce, I realize e-commerce businesses have some particular things around inventory and cash flow, but most of the other parts of accounting are similar. So I realize I just create the course as is, financial systems and reporting for any kind of business. And then e-commerce I do as a separate optional upset, you know, someone can just buy that course themselves. And I haven't redone that yet, so it's not available, but that's on my list of courses, so the next batch of content that I'll do. And that really made it more simple for me. And it also made it the purchasing process more simple for other people because there weren't so many options.
So what type of transformation did you sell with the course, and how did you figure out the pricing and the value?
The transformation, that was actually, I found that difficult to communicate in the beginning. I was thinking that we're teaching bookkeeping, but really we're teaching financial literacy, and that is business owners feeling comfortable and understanding their numbers, whether they're preparing themselves or whether they're not. And maybe we're still not articulating the transformation well. I think even though we did a beta group, I probably focused more on the content creation side, even though we pre-sold that. And we're really now gearing up to the marketing. I mean, we've been selling it, but really doubling down on the marketing side. So in terms of transformation, I would say that it's going from not understanding or not feeling comfortable or being overwhelmed with your business numbers to knowing what to look for and feeling comfortable that it's being done well. So financial literacy. So you asked about the transformation. I think there was another component of that question I may not have covered.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, anytime you have a transformation, you need to put a value on it, and then you get the pricing for the course, right? So once you got the transformation figured out, how did you figure out the value of that and then get the pricing for the course?
The way we looked at pricing, we've tested different prices. So the challenge I had with pricing, having never sold a course before, I've only sold services. And I think selling services is different. And also I know the market for bookkeeping. So I know really what you can charge for different things. Whereas I've never seen the kind of course that I created. So it was quite challenging. I couldn't just go to the market and see, well, what do other people charge for this? I could look at the perceived value of what we were providing. And I didn't want to price. I wanted to make sure I had people. My first priority was to get enough paying customers in, because I just wanted to get feedback and iterate. So I didn't want to price too high that it was going to prevent people from buying, and I didn't want to price too low so that people didn't value the content and not put in any work. So we just kind of tested some different prices, and that beta group we priced pretty low. So we charged $277 just to kind of see what would happen. Then the second time we sold the course, we created three different prices. So there was kind of like a value bundle. So you could buy the course, you could buy the course and coaching, and then you could buy a one-on-one consultation with me. And so they were different prices, with the most expensive being $999 and the middle being $599, which is what most people buy. Mm-hmm. And then we iterated again and realized, well, maybe we should sell financial systems separately to financial reporting. They're actually two courses. So that's not a very clear answer, but that's probably a reflection of how much experimentation we've been doing with the pricing. And I don't know that we've got it fully figured out yet. And it's a new space for me around how do you actually price courses. And my intention is that we'll be able to increase our price over time as we start to build a reputation, because I think this content, I'm really proud of the content and I think it's quite unique. So I just want to get a lot of people going through who get results. And I feel like when that's happening, we will be able to increase our price as well.
So let's talk about the second launch. What was different once you had the beta group go through, and then how did you relaunch the course again?
So the second time around, we did a lot more marketing. The first time it was literally me just contacting people directly. The second time we had a much better organized campaign. So 2 weeks before the course start date, we ran a free 5-day challenge, and we ran that through a Facebook group. And there was daily tasks it was basically just part of module one in the course. So it gave people a taster for what the course looked like, but it also got them a result in that week. And then we invited people onto a webinar on the 5th, so the last day on the Friday. And I pre-recorded the webinar, but I was there because I was doing live demos, and then I was there doing Q&A and interacting with people at the end. So that worked reasonably well. And we did Facebook ads and a LinkedIn campaign to get people into the challenge group. So I think we had about 40 people in the group, which is not huge numbers, but for the first time for us running the challenge. And again, we hadn't successfully run Facebook ads before, so we're still learning and tweaking that. So we ended up with 12 again in the second group of the course, and a slightly different demographic to who went through last time in terms of not having as many e-commerce businesses.
Interesting. Tell me about the free 5-day challenge. What did that look like?
So people would subscribe to the challenge and they would be invited into the Facebook group, and then I recorded a daily video which had, so basically we created a five-day framework of different things to implement or check within your accounting system. So there was a video and then there was a task. And each day the video was published in the Facebook group and it was emailed out to everyone in the challenge. And then we created a workbook that they got access to on day one or whenever they subscribed to the challenge, and that had their daily tasks in the workbook. And then each day people would ask questions each day because they'd try and do the task and then get stuck on something or learn something. And so I'd be interacting in the group each day, depending on what questions came up.
So when you first marketed this, you said you did it in a group, in the Facebook group. Was that yours or someone else's?
So the very first time I was just messaging people directly. Uh-huh. And then this time we created a new Facebook group to run the challenge.
Okay.
So I wasn't necessarily promoting it in a Facebook. Well, I did promote it in Facebook groups, but that was separate. That was okay. Me just kind of saying, hey, we've got this challenge. And also to my friends that run Facebook groups, I think a few of them shared the challenge in their groups as well. And then that brought people back to our group, which was where we were running the challenge.
Okay, so you had a landing page for this free five-day challenge and you were getting traffic from LinkedIn, Facebook paid, and Facebook groups, correct?
Yes.
What about LinkedIn? How did you do? I know getting paid traffic through LinkedIn is super, super expensive. What did you do there?
So we weren't doing paid traffic. There's me and also our marketing guy, we post regularly on LinkedIn most days. And so we get pretty good views of our posts and pretty good interaction. So we put together a campaign where we pre-wrote the daily posts that related to things around financial literacy, around how it feels if you get a tax bill or a letter from the tax department. Some of it was educational around, you know, what is a cash flow forecast and why should you be trying to figure out what money you'll have in your bank in the future. So we created a whole lot of content like that that related loosely to financial literacy. And then we shared that regularly on LinkedIn and tried to get engagement around these topics. Like, what does financial freedom mean to you? And through that engagement, we were also sharing, well, come and join this challenge and you can start to learn and implement some of these things.
And then you ran all those people to the webinar. Can you tell us kind of what the conversions were like? Like how many people that joined the actual five-day challenge completed that, and then how many people of those went to the webinar and how many bought in the end? Just kind of so we see the numbers, the percentages.
Yep, sure. So it's pretty small, so I don't know if the our percentages would be skewed because the population, like the sample size, not that big. But we had about 40 people in the Facebook group. It was difficult to tell if they finished. We could tell if they were interacting, and we could tell if they were opening the emails, but we couldn't tell if they're actually doing the work. But I'd say probably about 10 of the 40 actually were quite active most days in interacting. Then we had about 10 on the webinar, so pretty small numbers, but they weren't necessarily all of the same people that were being active in the group. And then of those, just a couple. So this whole process we're doing for the first time, so I think we might have got only a couple of sales from that. So the conversion rate wasn't high. But my thought process behind that is this is the first time we've tried a funnel like this. Normally we sell services quite differently. So all of this is learning and we're going to see whether it works or not. And if it does, then we'll increase our ad spend and try and get more people into the challenge, tweak the webinar, and then try and improve conversions that way. Or we might look at other options like doing affiliates or partnerships or other options.
So what's the next move? What have you done?
We're trying it again. So we're actually in the middle. I'm running a five-day challenge again right now. And so we'll see how this goes. And then we might, so things I'm considering, should we do it for free or should we have a small fee? Because it seems like people seem to get better results if they pay a little bit of money, then join up for free and then do nothing. Do we need to drive more traffic to the challenge? And in some cases, maybe someone's ready to buy already and they don't need to go through the challenge. So should we actually be trying to just generate more traffic straight to our landing page. So they're the kinds of things I'm thinking about at the moment. And it's quite new to me because, as I said, selling services is quite different. For almost 3.5-4 years, we've never done any paid traffic apart from a little bit of Facebook ads that really didn't work for us. We did a zero audit and people liked it and signed up and then wouldn't give us their zero file access to actually do the audit because they thought it was a scam or might be a scam. So it's quite different to what we've done previously.
So it's mostly Facebook traffic and Google AdWords, right, that you're doing right now?
We're not doing any Google AdWords. I'd say where our customers are still coming from at the moment is relationships and referrals. So in the last batch, even though we tried that funnel, most of the people still came in through our network, our email list, our social media followers. So I think we still have work to do on building a funnel. And so we tried it, we'll try it again, and I think we'll keep on iterating, but I don't think it's not working for us well yet. But the reason that I'm persisting with it is because courses are a lot more scalable than services. So when we figure it out, then instead of servicing our customers has always been a challenge with a productized service. Whereas if we sell 1,000 of this course, we'll still be able to deliver it. So yeah, we're still figuring out how we ramp up the marketing side. I wouldn't say we've got that figured out yet.
Yeah, it's fine. It's always messy before you get it. When you mentioned LinkedIn and that you get engagement, what sort of posts do you put on LinkedIn? Because it's such a hot topic lately. You know, you're getting everyone should do LinkedIn, which, you know, I sort of agree. But getting the content to engage on LinkedIn, it's getting a little more difficult. So what's the plan and what are you doing that works best on LinkedIn?
I often just write about things that are interesting to me and I want to write about. Often posts that aren't the business related, but they're also a bit personal have done well for me. So I did a post that was about a family holiday and how I needed to do a little bit of, I've got a young daughter, a 5-month-old, and I was talking about work-life integration and the fact that I had to work a little bit on a holiday, but I could, which is not ideal, but also that I'm able to be there for my daughter and all of her life events because I've got the flexibility with the business. And so that post got about 10,000 views because that must have hit a nerve with other people around, well, work-life balance is pretty hard when you've got a baby, but maybe work-life integration is a different term that better reflects what we're doing, juggling parenting and running a business. So that posts like that, basically posts that are maybe a bit controversial or start a conversation. They're the ones that I've found that have got engagement where people will come and disagree with you or want to share their perspective. Some of the financial literacy posts have done well where it's got people thinking or it's presenting a different framework or a model that they might not have thought about before. Yeah, I suppose it seems to be changing again. The types of posts that I was writing 6 months ago, if I've tried some just in the last couple of weeks and they haven't gone as well. So maybe there's more competition on LinkedIn these days.
I think there's some kind of a change with the reach too. You know, like when I've been looking at the algorithm, it's being a little more fussy. So we'll kind of see how that works out. How often do you post on social media?
With LinkedIn, it was almost every day. Mm. It's not quite every day. I suppose we've got a podcast that goes out weekly. And so we have, I suppose there's my pages, Facebook and LinkedIn. And I use Facebook for business only every now and then. And then we have the Bing Ninjas pages. LinkedIn doesn't seem to get that much engagement. Facebook, we post probably every couple of days, but again, don't have that much engagement. And the same with Twitter and Instagram. We're kind of posting there, but I'd say it's my LinkedIn personal page and the other LinkedIn personal pages of our team that probably get the most interaction. So that's probably how often we're posting. And then we email our list every week with the podcast, and then we've got a monthly newsletter, and then we might also send out an email if we've got a special offer or something particularly interesting that warrants its own email.
That's quite a bit of content. just when I think about it, it's quite a bit. You're definitely outworking me with the content, which is great. All right, Meryl, where can people find you?
BeNinjas.com, which is B-E-A-N, Ninjas, or on LinkedIn. Happy to connect there too, and that's to search for Meryl Johnston.
Awesome. It's been great.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Before you go, let me know if you enjoyed this interview. leave a review, subscribe, join the Smart Brand Marketing Facebook page, whatever is easiest. Also, if you need my help marketing your online course, or know that your business could use some SEO, come to smartbrandmarketing.com, check out the case studies, and reach out to me. Once again, smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.